sometimes stuff just gets weird. You know what I mean?
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 92 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Mo Dick, also known by his actual birth name, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and... Oh, wait there.
Oh, no. No. What? Go on.
Can you feel my heartbeat racing?
Oh, you fucking prick. I'm so glad this isn't a video podcast at the moment, because if anybody saw your acting then, you literally acted that out. That wasn't like, hey, can you feel... You literally went, oh. Unbelievable. Yes, as you probably know from reading about... guest is this week, if Morgan's terrible pun didn't give it away, it is singer, songwriter, guitarist, drummer, all-round top chap, Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath.
Yes, I'm so pumped about this episode. Under Oath are a band that both myself and Sean absolutely love. They're one that really defined genres over the years, from a kind of emo, post-hardcore, metalcore, wherever you want to call it. There's a bit of everyone. Such an iconic musician, and we're going to get some incredible stories over this next hour.
Yeah, not only was he in iconic band Under Oath, but we even talk about some of the time he spent in another band that you might have heard of. I think it's a band. It's either a band or a dance craze called Paramore. Paramore. I don't know. I think it's a dance. I think it's one of them TikTok dances. But yeah, he was in them as well. So that was, yeah, it was a great chat. It was absolutely lovely to get to see him and spend time with him.
Yeah, it's one we've wanted to do for such a long time. It's been on the dream list. But this conversation provides such a glimpse into his astonishing career. Not only do we cover everything Under Oath, from their journey, original breakup to reunion, and the impact of the band, but some exclusive news on new music, his work as a singer-songwriter for a host of other musicians, forgetting lyrics, fatherhood, secret hobbies, his side project The Almost, and of course, that time he was behind the kit in Paramore, and some crazy experiences to go along with it.
Yes, it's a good one, this one. Well, they're all good ones. If you don't believe me, go back and check out the other 91 episodes of Sapnin Podcast, and yeah, let us know your thoughts on this and all of the other podcasts as well. You can do that by tweeting us or Instagramming us at SapninPod. That's at SapninPod. That's at SapninPod.
Yeah, and when you look back at all the guests we've had in these 92 episodes, it's quite surreal sometimes. Like,
it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers.
Aye, so you can see how bonkers it is for yourself and how great my acting is on all the other episodes. I think I'm worthy of an Oscar right now, Sean. I think that's how good I'm becoming. But at SapninPod, Twitter and Instagram, let us know. Does Morgan deserve an Oscar?
I don't know what Oscar is, but if he's a big bomb, yes.
But speaking of mad experiences, Sean.
Yes.
You and I have not seen each other for almost 6 months due to all the crazy shenanigans on planet Earth right now. But this week, we actually got to meet up for the first time in quite a while.
Yes. Did you think I was fatter in real life?
No.
Good. That's what I like to know. Yeah, we met up for the first time in months and months and months. And yeah, it was nice. It was it was a nice day. We got some work done. We got some ideas sorted. But we were in Cardiff to meet up with a guest, a future guest, and he ended up not turning up. So bad, bad impression. You'll get that joke later on when he comes on.
But, of course, you know, we had a good time. We had a laugh.
Yes, we did.
We planned a lot of things. We reminisced some stories about Cardiff. And you remember the time where the blackout got kicked out of a show for fighting the security?
Yes. Remember? Yeah. So yesterday, me and Morgan were hanging around. I say hanging around like we loitering. like a bunch of pervs. We were hanging around Cardiff Bay. And... I was reminded of a time when there was a venue called The Point in Cardiff and the Blackout were playing a Christmas show there, and the security at The Point had spent the whole gig punching and kicking all the kids in the front row who were like trying to crowd surf or getting too close to them. So if anybody remembers the Blackout, and I don't know why you would, but we had a member of the band called Matthew Davis who played guitar, the quietest member of the band. He lost his rag on stage. He lost his mind and started fighting a bouncer. He jumped into the pit and then we all jumped into the pit. Like, as soon as Matt went, we all went, oh, here we go, then. So we all jumped into the pit. I literally barely splashed onto the floor. And then all of a sudden I get up and I can hear a guitar playing. I turn round and Ramesh Dodangoda of Longwave Studios and recording loads of bands fame was on stage playing Jingle Bells while all of the Blackout were fighting security. And then we didn't get to finish our gig and then we got banned from there. But then I was talking to Matthew yesterday about it because I needed to find out the name of the venue, and Matthew reminded me that a week later me and Matthew tried to go to a gig there. They let Matthew in, but didn't let me in.
Why?
It's because I had the stupid blonde hair, innit? It's like magpies, isn't it? It's like, it's obvious. Oh, he was a twat who was here last week.
Oh, it's Fringe. Matthew. Fringe is back.
Yeah, Matthew's head's like a, it's just pink, it's plain. It's like a man's thigh. It's like a pink balloon. So people don't recognise him. They just go, oh, all right, cool. That blonde freak was here last week. Go fight then.
I wonder if you're still banned.
Well, it's closed down, so I think I've won that. Because I'm still going and that venue isn't, so take that. But also, please come back because we need more live music venues now, more than ever.
That is true. But if you want to hear even more mad tales and stories of Sean's days in the Blackout with his new band Raiders, who might be releasing something soon or not, I don't know, and everything to do with Sapling Podcast, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapling, where not only do you get all this information, but you can become a part of a lovely community where you will fit in instantly and make hundreds of new friends.
Hundreds of new friends.
Yeah, because they got friends, and then their friends have got friends, and then their friends have got friends, and then their friends have got a dog that apparently gets a lot of likes on Instagram.
Well, of course they do, because people care more about dogs for some reason. Anyway, also with our Patreon as well, if you are a member, you know over the last week we've put up a pre-order for our t-shirts, which will be going live to the rest of you guys from Monday after this episode comes out. So please check out our socials at SappeningPod, at SAPPENIMPOD, to see about possibly purchasing a new Sappening shirt, hopefully.
Yeah, I hear it's perfect for selfies too. So if you're like, oh, I've been stuck in the house, need something else to post, I need something else to look fabulous in to show off, then why not pick one up? Patreon.com/Sappening. You can get one now and you'll have future news exclusively first on everything like that going forward.
Yes, come and interact with us in our fantastic Patreon group where we all love each other, support each other, and it's absolutely fan-bloody-tastic.
Yes, and we'll cheer each other up because even though everyone in the UK, possibly overseas as well, would fly in because this weekend should be Reading and Leeds Festival. Ah, we're all sad. But hey, why don't we now talk to someone who headlined Reading and Leeds Festival in 2014 behind the kit with Paramore? Oh, it's Aaron Gillespie, our guest this week. How's that worked out, Sean?
Nice, real, excellent segue. I thought you were talking about me, and I was like, I've never headlined Reading or played drums. Anyway, here's Aaron Gillespie, fucking Sapling!
Sapling!
Hold up. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Hi.
Yes! All right, yeah, I'm going for it, but that's fine. A lot of people don't.
I don't think that I'm fucking cool enough to say Sapnin.
Oh, no, come on. You are.
You are.
I got two kids. It's 10 in the morning. You know.
That's fair enough. Yeah. So, yeah, our guest this week is a drummer, singer, songwriter, and all-round great human, Aaron Gillespie.
Yes.
How are you today?
Very nice of you. The introduction was very nice. Very, very nice. Thank you. I'm good, man. It's 10 in the morning here. So I've been up for a few hours working, actually. I had to turn something in today. So, and then we also have like a three-month-old baby right now. So
ooh, there's not a lot.
Thank you. Not a lot of sleep going on in the Gillespie house these days. So,
yeah. You know. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time anyway, man. We do appreciate it. But as you said, it seems like it's been a very busy few months, even in this whole crazy lockdown pandemic madness for you. Your second child being very busy with some stuff as well. How's the last few months been?
I mean, you know, I'll be really honest, and it's not to discredit, you know, everything that's going on in the music industry and in the world. I really have enjoyed it. I'm 37, and for the last 17 years, I've been on the road like the majority of every year. So this has been, I've been home since February. So I traveled to Florida for about a month to do a series of Under Oath live streams that we did. It was really great, but it was traveling was more of a pain in the ass because at home, you know, I have the studio here. I have a bigger studio in the city. Traveling was a pain in the ass because we had to get tested before we played together. So, and then I couldn't fly back and forth. I don't live in Florida with where the rest of the band is. So I live like a 4-hour flight from there. So I couldn't fly back and forth. And we have a new baby and I have a child that's in primary school. So like, I literally like had to just sat in Florida quarantine. So for me, the past few months has been great because all the stuff that I normally wouldn't get to do, production and a lot of different songwriting and session work, normally I would say no to because we're traveling or whatever. I was able to do it all. So it's been really fun, you know, just kind of working inside of different genres of music. You know, we did those Under Oath live streams which ended up being really successful. And yeah, just been working more than I've ever worked. And I've been able to do it, most of it, literally in this room. So
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, man, it's great. It's been really great. And, you know, I got to be there for my wife's whole pregnancy and all along with a new child and just things that I miss a lot. You know, usually you fly in to see the baby be born and you get a couple weeks off and then you're right back at it. So it's been great to like kind of hit pause, you know, here in my old age. So
yeah. Yeah, nice. It's nice to see they've had that mixture of stuff of having time off, get to spend precious moments with the family, but also be creative with a little bit of different things as well.
Yeah, you know, something a lot of people, I don't talk about a lot, but I write a lot of pop songs for other people. I don't make pop music, you know, as an artist, but I've been able to like really connect with a lot of different writers and stuff over this time because everyone is just doing this. I mean, I literally have been sat here writing songs most of the time. So it's just been cool. And it's been of course, like I would love to play live, but we did a month, you know, basically a month worth of those live streams. And it's called Observatory. I think you can actually, UndereOathObservatory.com, you can actually get tickets to them till the end of the month for the rebroadcast. But they, it kind of scratched that playing live itch. And I'm getting in an age now where like touring, I don't love like I used to. You know, I love playing live and love meeting people. But like the shit in between is just coming to an age now where that's really tedious when you're gone for like 6 weeks, but you work a total of like 30 hours, you know, but the rest of it is just, the rest of it is just sat on a bus or in a plane. You know, it's gotten to this point with our band now where we're all flying all over the place all the time, home to see our kids and to do this and to do that. Like the traditional 6 week tour, I don't really long for that anymore. You know, like I don't, it's not, the only part I love about it is such a small part now.
Yeah,
but I don't think a lot of people realize that, especially like music fans as well, that, you know, even though you love the shows, you love performing live, that it's a lot of work in between, the traveling constantly, you miss so much of your home life as well. I don't think the regular music fan kind of realizes that on some level.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much involved with moving, you know, you're moving. You know, in our case, you're moving a tractor trailer full of shit, a huge bus, and like 25 people. And you're building this show every day, depending on if you're headlining or not. But say you're headlining, you're building this large thing every day. And yeah, I mean, we don't have to do that, and I'm grateful, but it's like, because of that has to be done, there's so much time and space, you know, in between from gig to gig. And that's hard, you know, and I deal with, in our band, we have 13 children between the six of us.
Wow.
Yeah. And I deal with guilt a lot, you know, when you're gone, but it's not realistic. You can't fly home every day. It's not financially realistic and it's not logistically realistic. So, you know, I deal with that. Like I should be home. You know, we don't have a show today. What the fuck am I doing here? We don't have a show today, but I'm sat here in a parking lot. Like, what am I fucking doing? Like, I should go home, but it's not worth $1,000 or whatever to get to the other coast, or, you know, especially if you're like in Europe or in Australia or something, like it's not even an option. So,
Well, mentioning those observatory shows, how was it with like doing such like a high production performance, but like with no crowd there? How was that for you guys?
You know, I'm going to be really honest with you. When I'm like the creator in the band, one of the creators in the band, like musically making tracks and writing songs. And that's my kind of area and performing the songs. Like when it comes to the day-to-day logistics of the band, like production, that stuff doesn't interest me. So I didn't really know what we were getting into. For months we had this conversation, like people were doing these live streams, other artists, and I just didn't enjoy them. And not to say that people didn't do a good job, I just felt like it was boring for like the fan. You know, I'll watch some guy play piano for 3 hours and it's interesting to me, you know, because I'm like listening to the songs, but for a lot of fans, I think they want something that is mimicking more of a live show. So we kept saying no, or kept butting heads as a band. Like, I don't want to do that. So finally our manager and one of the guys in our band, and we have a creative directors like for our records and stuff that do all the art and t-shirts, and they put this idea together, and I flew in and I walked in and I was like, oh wow, because basically it was like a circle we had built with all these metal, you can probably go on YouTube and see a song or something, and it's still up again to purchase for all you can get all three for like I think it would be like $45 American, and then at the end of the month they get pulled down. But when you're inside of this circle, we played like in a circle. It was pitch black in this room. It's this large warehouse where we rehearse and we rent a lot of our production from there. But when you're inside of the circle, you couldn't see out. You know what I mean? So it was like you were in like this pod, like this space pod. So it really was exciting. And I think the fact that you know before you go on that a bunch of people are watching and have purchased these tickets. And our whole thing was we wanted to make it feel like you're there. So we had like 10 camera angles. So there's all these camera guys inside of the circle. Cause I think that what made live streams boring to me, like for the consumer, was it would be like a stage and a band might buy production or whatever, but it's just a camera and then another camera. It just didn't feel like you were in it. You know what I mean? So I think for us, we wanted it to feel like, and if you guys go watch, you'll see, we wanted it to feel like you were inside of a show. So I think the best way I can put it is that it feels like a music video mixed with a live show. But what we wanted to do, it's completely real. You know, there was no, we didn't pre-record it before the air dates. Like it was real. Like it was 100% there.
Yeah.
Nothing was gone back and touched up or, you know, so I think that it was really cool. I think that people enjoyed it. And it did scratch that playing live itch. You know, we hadn't played since November of last year. We did a bunch of holiday shows with the Day to Remember at downtown Disney in Orlando. So we did like 5 sold out nights there, just us and them. And then we hadn't played since. We had begun to work on an album. We were getting together every few weeks and writing. And then in March, we had to stop because of the lockup. So we hadn't seen each other since March. So, and we hadn't played together like properly, like, you know, other than in the studio since November of last year. So it was really cool. And I think people could feel that through the live streams. It was exciting. And I think absence makes the heart grow fonder, you know? So,
yeah. No, exactly. But as you said, it's quite interesting to see how creative you can get with those kind of things. But doing 3 nights of the live streams as well, you revisited some of Under Oath's most iconic records. What was that aspect of it like for you as well? Was it quite interesting just having all these memories come back of some songs you haven't played in such a long time?
A lot of the songs we do play, you know, we play songs off all 3 of those records, but we wanted to play full album plays throughs of each record. And Lost in the Sound of Separation specifically, there's some songs on there we've never played live.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a bit uncomfortable, like cramming for a test, you know, because we would do like 3 or 4 days off in between and then rehearse and then have a camera rehearsal and then do the stream. So you had a few days to get your brain wrapped around like, okay, like, I got to remember all these parts and all these fucking lyrics. And that's always the problem I have. It scares me the most is always like the drum stuff is kind of muscle memory after a while. You know, you do it a few times and you're like, oh, I get it. But with vocals, like I forget lyrics because I'm writing all the time and doing stuff all the time. And I always like stuff runs together, man. I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like you forget stuff. And then like last second it'll come to you and you're like, oh, thank God. You know?
Yeah, I've had that. Yeah, I've had that several times on stage. Yeah, I've had it on when you've been like, oh, I don't know what's next. I don't know what's next. And all of a sudden your body goes, it's the words, whatever. And you're just like, how has it done that?
I hate that. You know, in a live setting, it's like, at least if it's a known song, you can kind of rely on the crowd. Or a lot of times Spencer will pick it up for me if I forget. But that thing, you're screwed because it's like being totally exposed, right? Like the audio is just pure that. So it was nerve-wracking, but we had a ton of fun, man. It was a ton of fun. It was a shit ton of work, but like it was a ton of fun, and I think that it kind of encapsulated that live feel for fans, and I think that it was relaxing for us to be able to play together and then for fans to see that, and yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, nice. Well, you mentioned that you were in the midst of writing a record at the moment. Is that on hold for Under Oath, or have you all still been doing stuff over the pandemic?
No, we're just every day. Everyone works on something every day. I have no timeline or plan right now. You know, the world is so fucking weird. But every guy in the band has a studio or some sort of setup, so we're always sending stuff to each other and we'll see. I think it's hard to just make a decision on what you want to do because it's a hard sell to go to a label and go, okay, we're ready to make a record. We need our money. And they're like, well, how are we going to sell that record? Because touring is the bread and butter now, but I don't know when that's going to happen again. I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, I think that some small places will begin to open. like 400 or 500 cap rooms, but for a band like us in the States, like, I don't know. I don't foresee, like, from conversations I've had and people I've spoken to in the business here in the States, I don't know much about Europe or South America, Australia currently, but they don't think there'll be any like real level live shows until the end of next year. But I don't really know, you know, I mean, we could be surprised. I think that the music industry now is kind of on hold here. I think you've got a lot of people making records, which also concerns me because I think that like when everything does open, you're going to have so many people vying to get inside a place to do it. And so much fucking music at one time. It's just kind of a gamble. It's a guessing game right now. As a producer and a writer, I've never been busier. Because I think people are like trying to load up a hard drive to make an album, to have that album out. So it's good for me, but also for the artist side, is it's a little bit scary. You know what's going to happen? Are we going to? It's too so much music going to come out that just oversaturation is going to happen. Like it, you know, it's already oversaturated. So what happens now?
Yes, it's a really really strange time. You mentioned some of the other projects that you've been doing. Can you tell us a little bit about some of them?
You know, I'd write a lot of songs with other writers for pitches, for pop artists and indie pop artists. I work on a lot of session work for a bunch of stuff I can't talk about. So just drum sessions and production for a lot of different people. I've been doing a lot of EDM stuff. So like top lining, I don't make electronic music, but I had a song come out last year with Rez, who's a large Canadian DJ. Under Oath just actually remixed a song for her and a guy called Grabbits, which is like, it's like a alternative radio track we kind of turned into a rock track. I just remixed a song for an artist here called Nothing Nowhere. Travis Barker had produced. I just been doing it. I've been doing a lot of remixes, which is weird for me. A lot of labels here in the States are doing like, they're wanting like indie rock remixes of like electronic music. So it's been cool. You kind of just get a vocal track and you kind of make another song. So yeah, I've just been creating a lot, which has been really cool. Like, but yeah, a lot of crap I can't talk about. And then just a lot of writing for other people. And then a bit of writing for myself as well. I'm a little bit like pessimistic sometimes when it comes to my own art, where I'm like, there's no fucking point. There's gonna be 1,000 records. I'll just wait. You know what I mean? But then at the same time, I'm like, I want to make something, you know, and then you wonder like, is a label even going to be there to do anything? You know, it's like, it's such a weird thing right now where everything is so up in the air, and I'm trying not to let, you know, with my own music, at least I'm trying not to let like that stuff get to me. But it seems like it's just bleak sometimes, you know, like with everything that's going on. You know, we have like a bunch of people that work for us that aren't getting paid right now. So it's like, it's just a weird time. So I've found it hard to create for myself, and really easy to create for other people. So, but any day you wake up and make music, you know, and you don't have to go do something you don't want to do, I'm grateful for. So
that's awesome.
Well, I found myself doing the same. Like, I'm really good at giving other bands advice on what they should do with their records and stuff. But then my new band now, I'm just like, should we put a record out now or should we hold on? But then we've had the songs for like a year, so we're just like, fuck it. We're just going to have to put them out now.
That's the problem is a band, right? Like, you write a bunch of songs and you're pumped on them. But then if you wait a year, you're fucking over it. You know what I mean? Like, you want to make a different thing now. You're on to the next set of songs or the next set of ideas. And it's hard, man. It's really hard. But I'm interested to see what happens. You know, I think it's a time that's like, that you can take this time and enjoy it, or you can take it and be pissed. You know, you can take it and go, like, I'm going to enjoy my family and I'm going to make cool shit. I mean, that was the whole thing with our Observatory thing, is we re-released all those. We own the rights to all those vinyls. So we re-released all those vinyls, and I wanted it to feel like, I collect vinyl, you know, so I wanted it to feel like when you get like an import, like you buy a UK import or like a Japanese import, like that was my part of the vision, is I wanted those records to feel like they were imported from like this fucking different world, you know, which is like COVID-19 quarantine, you know, like, so if you look at them, they all have like an OBI card around them that's like, it says Observatory Edition. So, you know, if you buy that record, it'll feel like this import from like this fucking
nice
horrible time, you know. So yeah. But I, you know,
that's a good idea. Yeah,
again, it's idea. What you make it, that's what it's all about. Exactly. Like, I think anything in life is what you make it, right? So.
Yeah, yep. No, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. But but talking about writing for Under Oath as well, I mean, how far as a band did you actually come with those ideas before everything happened? Again, was it a big plan in place? Was it a real identity of what the record was shaping up to be?
Again, we're always working on stuff, and I think that we are we're really bad at it, like narrowing down songs. But for the last record and for this next thing, whenever that is or whatever it is, we've like kind of really overwritten.
Okay.
You know, every album before this, we've written like 12 songs and banged our heads against the wall on what those songs are going to be, and then recorded those songs and released them. But with Erase Me, you know, we must have had 50 starts, 35. Like, I brought a hard drive to the studio and just turned it on and said, and we would make folders like, no, this sucks, like, maybe we'll work on this, or, and these are the songs we're definitely going to work on. So as it stands now, there's probably close to that there in a Dropbox somewhere. I have no idea what's next, you know. I think that, again, like, we're just creative people that make shit all the time, and most of it's never heard. And we just make everything. You know, our keyboard player scores movies. So, like, there'll be some shit in there that'll, like, start a song that's, like, just the coolest thing. And then something will get used for something else and you'll never hear it. You know, like on our last record, the song On My Teeth was just a drum beat that I had. And then we put that into a program and started pitching it and turning it into things. And it turned into a song in, like, an hour. You know, so I think that, like, for us, we're just highly creative people that make way too much shit all the time. So there's never a plan until there's a plan with us. It's with us, it's like four of us own studios. So it's like somebody's making something all the time, and you'll just get the bones of something, and you'll work on it, and then you'll send it back, and then you're like, ah, this sucks. Or you're like, you know, we have this Dropbox that's just filled with shit. You know, and on certain days, there's folders that, you know, they're like, this sucks, don't touch this, maybe work on this and take parts from it for other things, and definitely work on these. And every day I find myself moving stuff to different spots. And, you know, so there's no, again, you know, there's no solid plan, but we're always working on something. So we don't have a plan. I think it's hard to plan right now, you know, so.
Yeah. Do you think you'll, like, self-produce this record, this next record?
I don't know yet. We're not that far, you know.
Yeah, okay.
We're not that far. Okay. We haven't, like, yet the idea right now of, like, booking a producer, and, like, I don't know that any of it makes sense, and maybe it does. We, like, spent so much time and so much sweat equity working on those live streams that we've kind of just all been chilling now. So I don't know. I think for us, like, I would like to one day self-produce a record, but I don't think I would want to do it completely. You know, I think for me, I would want to do, like, hey, like, come in and listen to these 37 songs. What do you think? You know, and then have that person go home or whatever. And then, like, towards the end, come back and be like, did we fuck it up or does it make sense? You know, like, I think it's hard. You know, I self-produced my last Almost record, or co-produced. And it's weird because, like, I feel like, when you're in the room, you can get, we call it getting lost in the sauce. You know, you can get like, oh, everyone's jazzed. And the next day you come back and you're like, fuck, this sucks. You know, so it helps to have, like, somebody there that's like an objective person that's like, hey. But that being said, like, the biggest record in the world last year was Billie Eilish, and she made that with her brother in her parents' bedroom. So, yeah, you know, it's like, it's, I think the death of music is the rule book. Having a set of rules or a set of way things should be done. So I'd like to self-produce an Under Oath record, but then I also don't care as long as the songs get there. You know, like, we have this saying that song is king, and however you get there, like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, the journey is whatever, but as long as you get there and you feel like that song is, like, everything it's supposed to be, I think that's the goal with us, you know? So we'll see. You know, it remains to be seen at this point. So.
Oh, awesome. Well, yeah. Well, you mentioned the last record, Erase Me. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, if that's okay. Because obviously, that was the band's first record in 8 years. It was the first time you've released something with a band in a decade, I believe. I mean, what was that experience like for you, being the first record for the band since coming back together? Having time to reflect on it now, did you feel like there was a lot of pressure on your end? Because it seems that it's become another one of those cult classics for you guys.
No, there was no pressure. And that's why I think you got like a completely honest offering from us. There was no pressure because no one knew. It was like, I think this... You always have a conversation with people and they're, you talk about bands or artists and 90% of the time people go, I love their first record. And I thought about that a lot and I was wondering, why do people always say that? And I think that people always say that because they can feel an honesty from an artist's first record, because there's, when you make your first record, you don't give a shit about a record label, you know, or like, are fans going to like this? You're doing it because you got a chance to, and it's awesome. So with Erase Me, we kind of got a second chance at that because no one knew we were making an album. We had to keep this huge secret. Like, we were in Washington, D.C. making that record, and we like had to be careful, like taking pictures. You know, you couldn't post anything on the internet that you were in the studio together. You know, like, I couldn't like just tweet a picture of a drum set. You couldn't do anything. Like, we were there for 3 months and just like made music. And it was awesome. Like, it was the most, you know, I didn't open Instagram. We just fucking drank wine and made music. And it was like a second chance at that first record where you really feel like you're just alone. And I think that's why it was polarizing for a lot of fans, because for me, I'm just not interested in like making the same thing twice ever, because I think that making the same thing twice is a lie to your fans. You know, if you go make Define the Great Line Part 2, would it sell? Yeah, it would sell, but it would be a lie. You know, like, that's the definition of selling out to me, is making the same thing more than once, because then you know, it's like you go to the store and you buy the same pair of jeans when one pair wears out because you know they fit. You know what I'm saying? Like, with art, I feel like you have to constantly progress, you know. So for us, we were completely locked up and we got to do something that was whatever we wanted it to be. So there was no pressure. I think next time there'll be a little more pressure, because now, unless we just don't tell anyone, and I don't know.
Was there any did any of the band get papped together in Washington when you were all together? Was there any like Undroth fans who were like, I've seen two of them together, they must be doing stuff or anything like that? I mean,
we talked to some people, but it was like, not really, you know. It was like, we were in like a suburb of DC and we didn't really do anything. There was like a barbecue on the roof of our apartment building, and like, we would just work like from 1 p.m. to 3 a.m. we'd take the weekends off and like just like hang out, you know what I mean? Like, it was cool, man. It was really cool. Like, it was really simple, you know. I think that that's like, in my mind, when you overcomplicate things and you turn it into like too much of a thing, it's not fun.
And throughout your career, you've always really juggled so many projects, as you mentioned, writing for other artists with Under Oath, but also your other band, The Almost. But last year, you released a new record, and 2020 was actually the first time in 6 years that you guys played shows together, did proper tours and stuff. How's it been on that side of things, being able to do a lot more with The Almost again? Well, and
it was awesome, but that kind of got shut down too. You know, we only got to do one tour off the record. So we did like a playthrough of our first album. And then instead of like the traditional album show where you play all the songs, I was doing like an old song, a new song, an old song, a new song. And that's all that we played. And we were going to take that other places. And then this happened, you know? So that tour ended in February, the end of February. And we were supposed to go back out in June. And obviously that didn't happen. So that one was sad, man, because I was really passionate about that record, you know, and I was really passionate about, you know, kind of rekindling that. I got an all new band, you know, in that band. It's just me that's actually in the band. So I got all new guys and we had this great setup going. So that was kind of a shame. You know, the shows were so good. That's one. I took a big hit from that one. So, yeah, unfortunately, we'll see. I mean, The Almost is quite a bit smaller than Under Oath. So maybe we'll be able to do some. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that'd be sweet. But how do you really manage to juggle everything is a question I'd love to ask, because I mean, so for someone listening to this thinking, oh my god, he's constantly busy, he does so much, he's a family man, there's so much going on behind the scenes for you, behind the music, how do you really not prioritize but give enough time to each project individually?
I don't like to sit around. Like, I don't,
like, that's fair.
It's not fun for me, you know. I'm yeah. one of the lucky people in the world where I get to do what I love for a living. You know, when I was a kid starting out, like, we paid to do this. We borrowed money from our parents to go play gigs. You know what I mean? So for me, it's like the fact that this is my job now is just like sick. When I'm old, I'll sit around with my hand up my ass. Like, I'm not going to do it now. I just want to make shit every day. Like, that's my thing. It's like, I want to wake up every day and make shit. Like, I just want to make stuff, you know? So for me, it's like, I think that's why there's so much stuff, is because I just want to wake up every day and make something cool. Like, and maybe it'll get heard and maybe it won't, but cool if it does. That's why I think as I get older, I love not touring, because I just can wake up every day and make something. Touring is like a never ending fucking Thursday where it just goes, you know?
Yeah. The best thing you could do is probably make yourself a sandwich that day from catering.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like it's like playing is amazing, but everything besides that fucking sucks. You know, it's yeah. just like, oh, here we are, another parking lot. Like, so I don't, you know, we found ways, you know, have like a completely mobile rig now that I take on the road and make stuff. And I'm not a person to sit around, man. So I think to your question of how does everything get enough attention, I think I finish something and I move on to the next thing, you know? So I'm like very zoned in on something. And then, you know, like today I'm like working on this one song that's a pitch song with this female singer, and like I work on it all day today. I'm waiting for somebody to send me back a track. I'll mix it tonight and then I'll forget about it. Like, I'll put it in a Dropbox and send it to where it's supposed to go, and then tomorrow it's something completely different. It's just how I've always been, you know. Like, I'll work, focus, like, okay, next. Focus. Okay, next. Like, I find that, like, if you beat, like, I'm not the kind of writer that's like, I'm going to work on this song for 6 months. Like, that shit sucks. Like, I don't feel like there's any, if you're in it, like, just the beginning stages, like, it should be a couple of hours to, like, make the bones of something. And then you can spend 3 days recording it. That's different, you know, getting tones or whatever. But, like, I'm not the type of writer that's like, I'm going to think about these lyrics for a month. Like, that sucks. Like, fuck that song. Like, in my mind, like, that's how I see it. I'm like, that's not good then. Some artists it works for. Like, and I'm not saying I don't come back to stuff 2 weeks later, but like every day I wake up and want to make something. I'm not going to like work on the lyric and then next weekend I'm still working on the same lyric. In my mind, there's nothing there. Yeah, that doesn't sound fun. So I think that's why I'm just so quick, because it's just how I kind of do it, you know.
Okay.
Is there anything that you've co-written or co-wrote that people don't know about, that they'd be surprised that you were involved with, that they might have heard?
Maybe. I don't know. I can't think right now. EDM stuff. I'm trying to think. I don't do like a lot of rock music, like as a co-writer. I've done a lot of like country music and Christian music in the States. And yeah, there could be some stuff. I just can't think right now. Like, I'm kind of just really started like the pop side of my writing, like in the last year. So that stuff takes forever to come out, you know? But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. But speaking of the almost as well, one thing I did want to mention is back in that tour at the beginning of the year, it was actually the first time that the rest of the guys from Under Oath had actually come to see you play. I noticed you did like a big Instagram post about it, and that was quite a big emotional day for you, really.
Yeah, I mean, they had been one other time years ago when it first started, but they actually, Tim co-wrote one of the songs off the first record with me, and he actually played it. So that's that social media post you're pertaining to was directed towards that. Like, yeah, it was great, man. Just super, super cool. And then I, you know, the band that I got for the Almost in this last iteration is like all of the road crew from Under Oath.
On the way?
Well, a lot of them, like the two, okay. the two main guys. Yeah. So it was awesome, dude. Like, it's just, yeah. You know, I think there was a lot of feelings around the Almost in 2007 when that first record came out, where Under Oath was really busy and I released kind of this passion project that turned into something that became more than I thought it would. So I think there was a lot of feelings around that with the band where, you know, I was just busy doing this when I should have been doing this or whatever, you know, just, I think when you're 23, like, you process your emotions in a different way. And at 37, it's, you know, that stuff, you don't sweat the small shit, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, it was just cool to have everybody there and kind of.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, while we're talking about all these projects and stuff you've been a part of over the years, we'd be remiss if we didn't bring up the time you were Paramore's touring drummer.
Oh, yeah.
For quite a while during the whole self-titled era. I mean, that must have been an experience in its own for you, because obviously you're used to the touring, used to playing in front of all these big crowds and everything, but to do it with a band like Paramore, who have such a different kind of fan base as well, I'm sure that must have just been such a crazy time for you.
The fan base isn't as different as you think, which I was surprised by, but also, like, it was just, it was nice, because I think that after Under Oath, I was kind of wounded. You know, I quit Under Oath and didn't really know if I wanted to or not, and I was just like an anxious, emotional wreck, and I just needed a job. You know, like, I was at a point where, like, I didn't want to make anything. You know, I just wanted to, like, work a job, and I have no skills other than music, obviously. So it was great because I've known them for years and I just played drums. I had nothing to do with anything creative. And I did this for years, you know, like, yeah. It was a great way for me to heal and for me to kind of figure my own life out. And also, there was a lot of bucket list stuff in there for me. You know, I got to play on their live record at Red Rocks. Tweeted two nights at Wembley. You know, Madison Square Garden, yeah. Two nights. Wow. Just stuff that you dream about as a kid,
yeah.
You know, as a musician. And it was really special. They're close to me, so it was – and they make you feel like it's your home. You know, it was a really special time, and it allowed me to heal. But nothing's like playing your own music. Think that it's like, it's cool to go play someone else's, but it doesn't hold the same weight. It's like, you care about it, but it's not the same. You know, it's just a different set of checks and balances. It's a little more nerve-wracking when you're playing someone else's songs in front of headlining Reading and Leeds. You know what, yeah. I mean? It's like, yeah. It's like, don't fuck this up, because you're, you know, like, I mean, some of those crowds were just, speaking of Reading and Leeds, that was bizarre. Under Oath plays for big crowds, but that was like, you know, headlining Leeds in Reading was like, what the fuck? Like, that was that's a different thing. Something that it's a once in a lifetime thing. So I'm grateful for that time. I think that time taught me a lot about being a musician, not just a creator. I've always been a creator first and a musician second. And those 3 or 4 years taught me, like, to be a great musician. There was no playing around with that job. Yeah.
Cool. I wanted to ask, what was the catalyst that got Under Oath back together?
A group text, actually. We had, in 2014, we started talking about, like, oh, Chasing Safety is going to be 10 years old. We should do a show. And one guy wanted to do, like, one show. And we were all like, whatever. Like, and then it was weird. Like, we had, like, we planned the whole thing, like, on that text, like, let's just wait until, and then like a year later, it's like, let's just wait a year and then do Define the Great Line and They're Only Chasing Safety at one night. And we were all like, whoa, that would suck. Like, that'd be so much work. And they were like, okay, we'll do it in the States. Let's just do like 30 shows in the state. And that was the only plan. And then that tour turned into a world tour. And then that world tour turned into us supporting Bring Me the Horizon. And then that turned into, like, us secretly making an album and being a band again. So it just was like, it was like taking a date home and then, like, they never leave. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally like, I don't know that we've ever, like, sat down and said, we're back together. Like, I mean, we obviously are, but, like, I don't think we had, like, a formal, like,
well, so you weird. Think you are. Yeah. You I think mean, you are. You don't know. Yeah.
I mean, we are, obviously, we're a band, but I just, like, It just happened. You know what I mean? Like we literally set out to do just those shows. And then we got out on the road and we're like, wait, like this is what we're supposed to do. What are we doing? Yeah, let's just keep going. And then, you know, the US tour turned into a European tour, turned into an Australian tour, turned into a support tour, turned into, I mean, it just didn't stop for like 4 years. This is really when it stopped, and it's because we had to. So, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like you take a date home from the pub and you just never stop. That's what we're doing, I guess.
That's a perfect metaphor, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a great analogy for it. Outstanding. But going back to some of those bucket list achievements while touring with Paramore as well. You mentioned headlining Reading and Leeds. That sounds like it was an incredible thing. But I wanted to mention the Parahoy cruise as well, because I've seen a few videos from your drum angle playing those shows in particular. That must have been a different aspect altogether, being on a boat and really getting involved with everyone in Paramore.
So my final tour with them was the second Parahoy, and then Under Oath was actually rehearsing at that point. Like I had come from Under Oath rehearsals to do those last shows, and then then Paramore went away to make an album, and Zach came back, and that just kind of happened too. And I just would have had to leave anyways because Under Oath started, so it just was perfect. Like it was perfect. But the Parahoy thing was, it's a lot of fun. Playing on a boat is weird. As a drummer, because the second cruise in particular, like you always play a show right when the boat leaves harbor. So like at sundown and you're on a pool deck and there's 3,500 people on the roof of this boat. And as a drummer, you're sat there and everything is fucking moving, and playing, I didn't like. The crowds were incredible, but playing sucks. Like unless it's calm, like the first cruise was perfect. The second one's a pain in the ass. Every time we played, it was like, you know, we had to like put sandbags on shit to keep it from falling over. But it was so fun. But Paramore fans are like very different than Under Oath fans. You know, there is a more crossover than you think, but like Paramore fans want to touch you. You know, they want to like, and it's great. They're such kind people, but they want to be there. So like, it was great for me because I could walk around and hang out, but like Haley, just lockdown, you know. And even me, who's just the drummer in this band that's not in the band, it's like walking around was, I mean, it was, you know, I did another cruise tour 2 years ago, a Warped Tour thing where I just played acoustic and it was awesome. Like you just walked around and hung out with everybody. I think if Under Oath ever did one, you could just hang out with people. But Paramore is like, it's a different type of mentality. So it was a lot of sitting in one spot. You know, there was, like the days that you got off the boat, we wouldn't like and go see like Mexico or whatever. You just stay. Like it was the day you could actually walk around and see other shit on the boat. So it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. It was weird. That's a weird thing, but it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I didn't think of it like that, especially playing drums on the boat. Yeah. Oh,
it,
God.
That sucks. Like, I mean, sometimes it's fine, but
yeah,
it's, you know, I know the video you're talking of, the one behind. That was great. That was my first Paramore cruise. The second one was fucking terrible. Like, it just was like, I don't know what was going on. It was the same time of the year as well, but
yeah,
it was weird.
The waves were out that day.
I guess
crazy.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. And with all that, Aaron, as well, I mean, you know, you've said countless times you don't like just being about having nothing to do, but what do you get up to when you're not writing music? I mean, is there something you like to take your mind away from it to help you relax and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I like to fish a lot. We have a cabin up in Montana. We're actually going Monday for a week. I have two kids, you know, so I kind of like, I try and shut it all off in the evening. It's hard sometimes to do that, you know, but I like to shut the computer off and shut the phone off for a couple hours and have dinner with everyone. And, you know, we have a new baby now, so we're like on a schedule, my wife and I. So like I stay awake late anyway, so she goes to bed really early and I stay awake with the baby until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I sleep until 8 o'clock in the morning, and then I get up and start my day. And, you know, so we really only have a couple hours a day together. So I try to like make time for that in the evenings, but I don't know. My work is my fun. You know, like there's nothing in the world that compares to making music to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like, it's the greatest gift. And for me, it's like something that I want to do anyways. So, but I like to fish. I like to cook. That's pretty much it. Nice. I don't really like play golf or anything.
Yeah. So, do you have a signature dish?
We do a lot of grilling here year round, even in the snow. So we grill a lot of things, a lot of different meats. We really like Mexican food. So I've perfected a lot of Mexican dishes. I really like Indian food, but I'm absolute shit at cooking it. So that's something I would like to get into, you know. But you have to have like special stuff to cook like a proper curry. You have to make like, you need like a tandoor to make a proper curry meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You guys are in England. That's the best fucking curry in the world. Whatever. You know, it's just like, yeah, that's something I would like to do. So I get in these like these habits where I'll be like, I want to make like the best barbecue ribs. So I like work on it for like a month, you know, and then everyone's like, stop with the fucking ribs, you know. Or then like I'll get really into like making like the best rice, like Mexican, like coconut lime rice. So I like try like 77 different ways. And my wife's like, enough with the fucking rice. No, so I get like that. But my next foray is curries, I think, because I really love Indian food, but it's like kind of, you have to have so much special shit to make
it. Yes.
You can't just make a curry. Like you have to have like 1,000 spices. So.
Perfect.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And with all that, now I know like the music industry is kind of messed up at the moment, but is there anything else we can like kind of expect from your perspective and the Under Oath stuff?
Under Oath just released a remix with Rez and Grabitz. Just came out. It's called Someone Else. It came out about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. I just finished a remix, which I'm not allowed to talk about, so maybe edit that part out. I'm not really sure. You might have to write an email and ask someone. Yeah. So just, yeah, man, just making music.
Awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so, so much for doing this.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, man.
I should just say that, we had Matt Cutchell on not long ago, and he was singing you guys' praises, because obviously he fucking loves Under Oath. As does everybody. As does everybody. But, yeah, we had him on, and he was...
He's busting for an Emo Not Dead Under Oath collab.
Where's he from?
LA. He's in LA now. Yeah.
LA, that's what I thought. Cool.
You guys should hook up. I think that would be fantastic. It'd be good for everybody involved. But cool. Thanks again for doing
thanks,
this.
Man. Absolute pleasure.
And
hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. So fun. See you soon. You're listening
to Sammy Podcast. Yeah. Woohoo!
Oh, what are you dancing for? You fucking prick. Hey, doing fucking little gun hands. What's that about?
I don't know.
Oh, unbelievable.
I had a great time.
Yeah, I had a great time. He was fantastic. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks again to the wonderful Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath and Paramore and The Almost, and writing and singing and remixing Fame. Wow. Always busy. Fair play to him. Fair play to him. Thanks again to Aaron for coming on. Actually, the second member of Under Oath we've had on, because we had Chris in our former Download episode.
Yes, Download Festival 2019. We're lucky enough to speak to him with a little bit. So go back and listen to that episode where there's loads of guests from that year's festival. But no, it was great to speak with Aaron, someone I've wanted to interview for quite a long time. So I'm glad we got to do it. And yeah, I was a bit... after we did the interview... It was a bit of a surreal moment, because I actually asked him his signature dish, which isn't the question you think, some of your favourite musical acts you'll ask, but I did, so that happened.
Yeah, you did. You went full Sean. You went full Sean. Like, oh, hey, here's something that only Sean wants to know. What's your favourite signature dish? Like, Yeah, you went full Sean, like you started talking bollocks to a man. But yeah, it was awesome, and I'm glad we found out, to be honest. He likes a grill.
Yeah, and they're of such an inspirational band to so many. And of course, remember to go and check out those live streams on the website, available for the until the end of the month. I think they're going to be doing something with them maybe as well. And the reissue of all those classic vinyls you can find on their website. So all the Under Oath stuff everywhere.
Yeah, those shows at that observatory look insane. So yeah, check it out. I will be checking it out this weekend, I think.
If you've checked it out as well, why not let us know at Sapling Pod on Twitter and the Instagram. I'm not good at spelling, Sean. Do you know how to spell that?
No.
Oh, well, bugger then.
You have a go. You have a go.
Right, I reckon there's one of those weird A's.
How fast can you do it? Go.
At S-A-P-P-E-N-I-N-P-O-D. No, not that fast. At S-A-P-P-E-N-I-N-P-O-D.
What was that?
S-A-P-P-E-N-I-N-P-O-D.
Oh, got there. Yes. Yes. Nice one, Morg. You've nailed that.
Thank you, Sean. But you nail quite a lot of things as well. No, not like that. Not like that. I mean, music-wise.
Well,
You've got... Those are stories for another podcast.
Shagging in with Sean Smith.
Music. Raiders. What's going on?
Oh, all right, cool, yeah. No Womb Raiders, but my actual band. So, on Bandcamp, September the 4th, I don't think I should be saying this now, but I am going to say it, because we're going to start teasing it from Monday, I believe. September the 4th, raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com, we are releasing a song called Destructobot, which... for anybody who's had the chance to see us live, is the last song we've been playing that ends with "Everything is turned to shit." Fuck yeah! Because the only way I can deal with the constant misery that's going on at the moment is by being very, very sarcastic. So yeah, that song comes out September the 4th on Bandcamp. So please think about checking it out there. Raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com. The song is called Destructobot.
Lovely stuff. I will, Sean. Do you know what? September 4th, first thing I'm going to do that day is buy Raiders music.
Buy it?
I'm going to pay for music in 2020. Who would have thought that as a sentence?
That's crazy, isn't it? That's mental. I'm just going to wait till it's on LimeWire and then I'm going to download it on my old PC. But please check it out. It's a very, very aggressive song. It's a very angry song, but it's also very, very catchy, and there's a groove in it that makes me want to dance like a sexy stripper. So if there's any strippers listening to this who want to dance to the song, send us clips of the song, of you dancing to the song after it comes out, for us to use as promo. Get in touch at RaidersBandUK on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. We've got a Facebook for that nonsense.
Oh, wow. So you're saying this next single is going to be the next stripper smash hit?
It does have sexy tones,
okay.
Shall we say.
Okay.
You can't see this. I just pulled a sexy face. Yeah. No idea. It was more of a pervy, disgusting face. Yeah, it's a little bit disgusting, rude, dirty riff. Dirty riff face it is.
Lovely. But while we're checking things out as well, why not head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin. If you've enjoyed this podcast, any of the other ones we've done in the past, or anything like that, just us two talking absolute nonsense, then why not give a little back? You'll get more exclusive content and help make this podcast bigger and better each and every single week.
Yes, becoming part of the Patreon gets you exclusive access to our fantastic group, some behind-the-scenes podcasts, stories, photos, videos, and gets you to become part of the amazing, amazing community that has grown bigger than this podcast in my eyes. So
yes. Please
check us out, patreon.com/sapnin. And if you're already a Patreon member, you fucking rule. If you're not, suck a bag of dicks, get involved ASAP.
Yes. And we love every single member in that community. Literally, they bring us joy each and every single day. But while we're here and talking about it, if you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names on the Patreon we need to thank. But we're going to give a massive shout out to the elite members of our Patreon community. Those are the top tiers. And Sean's going to read their names out right now. But as always, I imagine they've tried to be comedians while changing their names, so you've got to read out some funny shit.
Yeah, we'll see now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thank you very much to the wonderful Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Sarah Don't Bother to Knock, James, Mitch Perry, Amy Chilvers, Emma Barber, Amaldine Urbano, Janelle I Want to Be Loved by You, Kasten, Dana Lasnova, Nathan Croshaw, Dilly Let's Make Love Grimwood, Kelly As Young As You Feel, Ohio Is For Emo Chester, Tom Owen, The Cult of David Dickinson, Liam Connolly, Drew Styles, Kelly Owen, Michael Engler, The Maxine Dancing Champion Campion, Kate Gentleman Prefers Ginger's Puttock, Scott, happy birthday, Mr. President Jones, Johnny Phillips, Ollie the 7-year itch Amesbury, Simon Amos, Jenny Munster, Kate Stevenson, Emily Senegals, Lucy Deeds, Martina McManus, John and Emma, Erin Howard, Kelly Some Like It Hot, Mallory, Becky Andy, Marcy Jacobson, Louis Cook, Sarah Stewart, Jason Heredia, Sandra Kuachek, Nuala Clark, Mike Cunningham, Charles Pendlebury BA Honours. That's because last week I pronounced Carl Pendlebury's name as Charles Pendlebury because I was reading too fast. Sorry, Charles, but that's your new name. Livy Cropper, James McNaught, Tallulah Grant, Kelly Cannon, Stuart McNaught, Sharif Awadali, Jenny Robson, Tony Michael, Lydia Henderson, Samuel Griffiths, Keris You Were Meant For Me Andrews, and last but not least, Craig Let's Make It Legal Harris. Good end. Good end, that was, Craig. Nice one, but thanks again for coming back and rejoining the Patreon as well. We appreciate every single fucking one of you guys.
Yes, we do. We love you very, very much. What was I missed a theme there. Was it love songs?
I have no idea. Only a few of them have done it, which is thankful. Thank you very much to those people for the other people for not changing your names and making it a disaster to read out with my voice.
Okay, but if you want to get involved with all that, patreon.com/sapnin. Again, thank you very, 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 very much to everyone. T-shirts available on there now. General sale very soon. So be fashionable and supportive.
Yes, if you listen to this now and you are a Patreon member, you have until Monday to pre-order your shirt before we then put it on sale to the scum, aka everybody else who's listening to this who's not part of the Patreon.
But we do love you too, so I mean, it's scum is a term of endearment. We thank you for listening, but we'd love you more if you became a Patreon. But anyway, why don't you click that subscribe button wherever you're listening to This Happening Podcast? If it's on Acast, Apple, Spotify, random podcast platforms we've never heard about until someone says, "Oh, you're on this as well," and we go, "Are we?" That's mad. Sorry to any offense anyone listening on those platforms. And give us a lovely rate.
Sorry to those people, but also get a better platform for listening to podcasts. Hey, do us a favor, go over to Acast, because if you listen on Acast, we get more money for the adverts, I think. So if you give it a listen on Acast, there's more chance of us eventually making some money from this. So cheers. Please support, subscribe, rate, like, and share where possible.
Yes, it's been a great episode. I've enjoyed this very much. It's been a good week. I've enjoyed seeing Sean in the flesh. And is there anything else you'd like to leave this episode on, Sean?
No. Oh, we also saw Patreon member Liam Connolly in Cardiff yesterday.
We did see him.
From the north of England, so that was nice as well. So, yeah, it was good to see him, and I guess we'll speak to everybody next week, unless you're part of the Patreon, and I'll see you in the group in about 10 minutes.
Great!
Lovely stuff.
Sat-man!
Fuck me now.
You're listening to Sappening Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.